I mean, obviously, it's physically and emotionally draining. And I give everything to the game and want to put myself and my teammates in a position to be successful. But I lay it all on the floor. I did that tonight. Gave everything that I had, both mentally and physically. And at times throughout the game, I was tired. And I don't contribute us losing this game because we got tired. Of course, we thought we was going to win. We had an opportunity. We came in the game believing we was going to win, for sure. We were playing good basketball. You know, we had some really good looks. Can't go back and think of right now exactly all the possessions that we had in the fourth quarter, but we had some good looks. Personally, I got to go home, start my treatment right now, get my mind focused, get my body focused, and get my body ready for game four and take it one possession at a time.
It's definitely tough. Hurts, you know, they made some big time plays. KD comes down, hits a big three, puts him up one, ice it on the wing. I'll probably be replaying that play for. It definitely hurts. You know, I'm human as well as my teammates. You know, to lay it all on the line like that, you know, you want to come out on the winning side. It's the finals. We had our horses in. You know, myself and Brian eclipsed the 43-minute mark, you know, playing pretty well. And they make some big time plays down the stretch. I mean, they're a juggernaut of a team. You know, you got to give credit when credit is due.
I knew it was going to be a tough game for us. And, you know, for us to win, I knew I had to get LeBron at least a, you know, 2-minute blow in that first quarter, because in the second half, he might not get a blow. The game was on the line, so I decided to stick with those guys, being a home down 0-2. I mean, great players, they always dig deep, have their will to win. They gave us everything they had. You know, I thought our team scrapped and competed. You know, I can't be disappointed with the effort and how we played. You know, they made the plays down the stretch that we didn't execute defensively or offensively, and they took advantage of it.
Well, it's not over. Job's not done. Closeout games are always the toughest. As you heard from many players in this league over the years, how tough closeout games are on the road. I've never been in this position, being up in the finals, trying to close it out. So I know how exciting that's going to be for us as a team, but their fans are going to be into it. They're going to be wanting a win for, you know, from their team. And tonight, it showed. Fans were great. We got to be even better at game four if we want to take this. It's an exciting time, but job's not done. We still got a lot of work to do.
Play a great poise on the offensive end. Limit their other guys besides LeBron and Kyrie to get off in three. And then just rebound the ball. Do those three things, we would put ourselves in position to win. And that's exactly what we did. So that's the formula for Friday.
He said three different times, I left it all on the court. And over the course of his career, he said that many, many times, that, you know, his goal is you lay it all out on the line and whatever happens, happens. And for a lot of his career, that has meant victory. LeBron said, I've played against some great teams, never a team with this kind of firepower. And I've been there every step of the way, and I have to agree with him. They got four Hall of Famers in their prime. It's not about the Cavs' failings, although there were failings. The Cavs are a championship team. They just don't have one of the best teams of all time. That's what they're playing.
If you're LeBron and the Cavs, I mean, what are you thinking? Like, what are we supposed to do the next 2 or 3 years? Because I'm sitting there saying, I don't know what any team is going to be able to do to stop this. I don't even think, for instance, if Paul George and Gordon Hayward both went to Boston, it's enough to beat Cleveland. And Cleveland clearly isn't good enough to beat Golden State. I just don't know where you're at mentally if you're LeBron James right now, thinking about the foreseeable future. And he says how, yeah, he's done worrying about what other people think, this and the other. Bottom line is he's 3-5 in the, he's going to be 3-5 in the finals. He could be 3-7 2 years from now.
The guy who can't play right now is Tristan Thompson. He can't get on the court. He averaged a double-double last year's finals. He's averaging like 2 points and 3 rebounds this year's finals. And he's a young guy on a good contract. And I think you have to put him out there and see what you can get. And obviously the name, the hottest name that's out there, because Indiana's going to have to figure out something to do with him, is Paul George. To trade a guy who's on a great contract, guaranteed for the next several years, for a guy who you might only get as a one-year rental, because that's what it is with Paul George. To trade a guy like Thompson to get Paul George, then try to convince him to stay once he's around the culture of LeBron James, and he can see, you know, what that does and what that means to his career.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What's going on? Welcome to the extravaganza on this Thursday afternoon. It's 12 minutes after 3, the 8th day of June in the year of our Lord 2017, and the penultimate day of the NBA season. Penultimate, if you do not know, means the second to last day of the NBA season. It all ends tomorrow. Make no mistake about it. There will be no getting up off of the mat. Not after being pounded in games 1 and 2 by 41 combined points. Then holding a 6-point lead with 3 minutes and just a couple of seconds left in game number 3. A chance to cut it to 2-1 to pick up momentum and get ready to go into game 4 and try to tie the series and put doubt into the minds and the hearts of a team that is being called one of the greatest of all time. And getting outscored down the stretch in the final 3 minutes, 11-2-0. 11 to zero. Did you hear that correctly? Did you watch that? Did you rub your eyes in disbelief? How does the defending champion, Cleveland Cavaliers, with the greatest player on earth, LeBron James, how are they held scoreless for the final 3 minutes of a game that they had to have to try to defend their championship? At home. How are you outscored 11-0 with the entire world on the line, your basketball world anyway? How does that happen when you give that up? When you allow Kevin Durant, the much maligned superstar of the Oklahoma City Thunder, maligned and criticized by virtually everybody for his decision to transfer his skills from Oklahoma City to Golden State that didn't need his skills. Well, it turns out they did need his skills. Without Kevin Durant, Oklahoma City does not beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in this series. I firmly believe that. Everything Durant has said has been justified. Everything Golden State said about acquiring him has been justified. They would not be good enough to beat the Cleveland Cavaliers as currently constructed without Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant scored 7 of his 14 fourth quarter points in that 11-0 run that the Warriors went on with 3 minutes to go to seal the game, including a dagger 3 directly in the face of number 23, the greatest player on the planet, LeBron James. You don't come back from that. There will be no Rocky music playing, come on, you can do this, getting up in game 4. There will be the smell of champagne in the visitors' locker room in Cleveland at the Q on Friday night. That's what we observed last night. Thanks for joining us for the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. Got a lot of thoughts that I want to share with you about what I watched last night. And most importantly, to be truthful, I got a lot of thoughts I want to hear from you based on what you witnessed last night. I want you to dial 866-240-1065 now and many times throughout the program. I want to get you on the radio. We're going to talk to our friend from the Bay Area, Eddie Meissonette's going to join us from Fox Sports and from Slam Magazine and from the Sports Fan Journal. We've had some pretty good conversations over the last 3-4 weeks, and it's time now to have probably our, well, like I said, I'm calling it, it will be our last conversation of the 2016/17 NBA basketball season. It is over, and now the only thing that there really is to discuss, since the winner has already been established and the loser, and I don't want to use that word, you know, the Cavaliers are not losers. The only thing that really needs to be established at this point is the all-time aspect of this. Are the Warriors 1 year removed from a 73-win season and a runner-up finish, grabbing this season 67 wins, and what will be after tomorrow night, a 16-0 faux playoff run and championship. 2 titles in 3 years, 200-plus regular season wins, and that 16-0 run. Are they now the greatest individual single-season team of all time? That will be one of the questions that will be discussed in sports radio, sports blogs, sports pages, columns, etc. Are they? Would the Showtime Lakers have been able to hold down the Warrior Express? Would Dr. J's 1983 65-win 76ers, the original fo-fo-fo prediction by Moses Malone that turned into fo-fi-fo, because they did lose one in the conference finals to the Boston Celtics. It was fo-fi-fo, but one of the most dominant teams in history. Excuse me. Would it have been the 95-96 Bulls? The 72-win Bulls, how would they have done against this Warriors team? Would they have been able to slow them down? Would the Bird and McHale and Parrish-era Celtics have been able to slow these guys down? What about the 04 Pistons? Rasheed Wallace says, we play defense like they've never seen. We would be able to take them down. Are they the all-time single-season greatest team? And then, of course, the story that I just kind of skirted around the edges of. LeBron James, the greatest player on the planet, everybody acknowledges. Will they still acknowledge that come Saturday morning? Will Kevin Durant, who is averaging 34 points a game in this postseason, in these finals, shooting 56% from the floor, shooting 52% from three, blocking shots, grabbing rebounds, dropping dimes, and outplaying LeBron James, particularly in the fourth quarter of the only contested game they've had. Remember, it was his dominance in games one and two that led to the two blowout victories. Now that there was a competitive game, competitive only, by the way, because of LeBron James for three quarters and because of Kyrie Irving for probably three others. It was LeBron in quarters one, two, and three, and it was Kyrie in quarters two, three, and four that carried the Cavaliers' offense. Do not want to disrespect the 39 that LeBron threw up at the board. Do not want to disrespect in any way, shape, or form what he has accomplished in this postseason and in this finals. He has been spectacular. But at the end of the day, as great as he was even in last night's loss, it is in three straight losses. As great as he has been in these finals, he is being outplayed, and last night, maybe not from quarter to quarter, because for the first three, LeBron James dominated. He finished with 39 points in another spectacular display of scoring and efficiency. His shooting percentage through the roof. LeBron, 15 out of 27. But the problem is, last night when it was needed the most in the fourth quarter, last night when it was needed the most in the last three minutes, LeBron James was largely MIA. 39 points, 11 rebounds, 9 assists, 5 turnovers, always an issue. But LeBron James did some things last night. The problem is, when it came down to it, Kevin Durant did the things a little bit better. 14 fourth quarter points, 7 in that three-quarter run. Finished with 31. On 10 out of 18, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, another block, another steal, and the dagger, and the 7 points again in that 11-point run. Kevin Durant did all of this against LeBron James. Is Kevin Durant ascending come Saturday morning in the eyes of analysts, fans, writers, talk show hosts? From the proverbial title, unprovable title of second best player on the planet, which he has carried for a number of years now. Is he ascending from that spot to the throne? Has the king, after this four-game sweep, especially if Durant throws up another tremendous performance in game four like he did in games one, two, and three, and wins the MVP of the NBA Finals, will he have ascended past 32-year-old LeBron James for that crown? As evidence of what I'm talking about, LeBron, about being dominant for three quarters but largely MIA for one, it's really even the entire second half. Because LeBron James, I want to say, guys, correct me if I'm incorrect, Jim Kushlin and Frank Argano, I want to say LeBron had 27 at the break, I think is what the number was, which means 12 in the second half. And it's not just the scoring total that will tell the tale about LeBron James' ability to carry the Cavaliers' offense from start to finish. It's the shooting. 78% in the first half from the floor. Mind-boggling. 37% in the second half. Woefully inadequate. If that's even 45 or 50, maybe there is a fourth-quarter change and a shift. And if clutch buckets are made, if clutch possessions are handled properly, if LeBron gets that steam going downhill like the train that he can be, instead of trying to kind of nibble around the edges, having the ball poked out of his hands by Andre Iguodala, shooting some fallaway jump shots that are just not as effective as his incredible drives to the basket, when you go 78% in the first half and you go 37% in the second half, while your opponent, the second best player in the game, is going for 31, 14 of them in the fourth quarter during winning time, when they were trailing? The question is certainly going to be asked. So it's all about not the winning and losing now. That's pretty much established. No team has ever come back from 0-3. The only question is can they stop the smell of champagne from soaking into the carpet in the visitor's locker room so that Steph Curry can't come back next year in his one visit to Cleveland and remind the fans there, hey, I can still smell the champagne up in here. You remember he did that last year after winning in Cleveland the year before in six games. Will they have enough muster, enough gusto, enough pride, enough talent to stop that from happening? It says here, no. Here's where I'm writing it. I say no. It's going to be in Cleveland. It's going to be a painful thing to watch. It's going to be very, very difficult. But it is coming. It is coming. The winning and losing has been established. Now it's a question of all-time status and current best player on the planet status. Want to hear from you at 866-240-1065 on all of those. Mr. Cushlin, Mr. Gargano, they are in as well. Mr. Mycenet will be by at about 4:05, I believe. Isn't that right, Jimmy, 4:05?
That is correct, yes.
So, guys, you know, as I said a second ago, the Cavaliers played like they meant it last night for the most part. They played like their careers were on the line. J.R. Smith, who was so invisible in games one and two, came to play and hit five huge threes on his way to 16 points that they desperately needed from him. Kyle Korver got it going a little bit, gave them eight, couple of bombs, and a dunk, shockingly enough. He did some things. Kevin Love did not have a good shooting game, and that's bound to happen from time to time, especially when you are a long-range specialist like him. It was at the wrong time. Did he let that stop him? No. Still scored nine, 13 boards, four on the offensive end, giving the Cavaliers chance after chance after chance. And, oh, by the way, chipping in with six steals as well. He did what he could on an off-shooting night to battle through it. Kyrie Irving was simply sensational, carrying the Cavaliers during the time when LeBron James was resting, and I don't mean on the bench, but I mean was gassed and was playing because he played 46 minutes, did LeBron James, and the Cavaliers were outscored by 12, I believe, in the 2 minutes he was down.
That's
they
right.
Just came down and hit 3-3-3 and boom, 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 boom. But Kyrie Irving, while LeBron James was gassed, carried them offensively, did some spectacular things, scored 38 points without the benefit of a single three because he was 0-for-7 from distance. It just wasn't there. But six rebounds, three assists for Kyrie Irving as well. And then LeBron, 39, I gave it before, 11-9, 15 of 27 from the floor, but almost an invisible fourth quarter, and certainly invisible, as everybody was, in that final 3 minute 11-0 Warriors run. So, guys, they came, and really with the exception of Tristan Thompson, and as I mentioned before, you know, Kevin Love had an off-shooting night but did contribute in a lot of other very, very big ways. Tristan Thompson, still just a mystery, did not score, grabbed only three rebounds. It was four rebounds last game, four rebounds the game before, three this time. He's averaging about 2 points a game and a rebound and a half a game, and it is simply mystifying whatever happened to Tristan Thompson. But that's it. At the end of the day, gentlemen, Jim and Frank, it goes back to what we kind of said after game one, and that is that it looks like the Cavaliers are the second best team in the world, and that's a fine thing to be. But the gap between first and second is not small. What do you think?
No, I think on that last point, you're right. And that's why in part of the montage I played for all of us, I included in there Tim Legler and Dave McMiniman more or less pontificating, well, if you're the Cavs this offseason now, you know, what do you do? Because that last part you said is still completely correct. That's what this finals has demonstrated to me, that gap between the Warriors and not just the Cavs, but in a way everyone else, of course,
right,
is just so massive. That if this Cavs team, which, yeah, to me, it is the second best overall team in the league, even better than a fully healthy Spurs, and the gulf is just this much, yeah, you know, what are you going to do in a way? So that's why I threw that in there. In terms of some of the intricacies from this game itself, you mentioned some of the guys that did or did not show up. I mean, heck, all three of us right now still have more points in these finals than one Darren Williams, for example. We're all even on that front, which, of course, shouldn't be because we're in radio booths, for God's sake. And then towards the end, you know, with the run that the Warriors
which
had,
you called, I saw Kush's tweet on Twitter, barring a big run, Cavs have this locked up.
No, that's not what I said. What I said was, and this is about end of the third quarter, that, okay, pretty much the only thing the Cavs could have to do is to make sure there's not one of those patented Warrior runs. Anything at 6-0 must be stopped somehow immediately, and what happens? 11-0 at the end. And I'm sorry, Bob, part of that 11-0 at the end is no LeBron killer instinct. Two examples. One, the play involving Kyle Korver. Now, I know Kyle Korver has said after the game and everything that, you know, he's going to probably, you know, looking into that shot and whatnot. Kyrie said a similar thing about his. And all the while, Draymond Green has five fouls. Why are you not having LeBron drive to find a way to switch and have LeBron being defended by Draymond Green take him to the hole? You're either going to get the bucket or you're going to get Green fouled out of the game. Those are the two examples of what I was talking about yesterday with the at times lack of killer instinct.
Combine that with what I was talking about yesterday. We're talking about the second half. We're talking about the fourth quarter. And we are talking about a guy who is straight up gassed. He's settling for pull-up jumpers in Game 3 in the same way that he did in Game 2. That's why the percentage was 78% in the first half and only 37% in the second. He didn't have it left in him to go at Draymond Green.
I hate this argument, by the way, today. What? I'll get to that in a second.
What's that?
I'm hating that argument today, and I'll get to why in a second, but please continue.
Well, I mean, you can hate it all you want. It is reality. It is reality. Now, that doesn't mean about the killer instinct either, because, and this is what will always, and I talked about this yesterday, and I've talked about it a few times during the, you know, the GOAT debate with Michael Jordan. And it's not that Michael Jordan had to take every last shot, and therefore neither does LeBron James have to take every last shot. We know about the deferring, making the right pass to Paxton for the winner, the right pass to Kerr for the winner. We know that. That's okay. But you do use the words killer instinct, and it has been something that has kind of chipped away at LeBron's aura and his legacy through the years. It's a series of possessions. It's a series of plays, not just the last shot. But my point is, can anybody ever imagine in an NBA Finals game, particularly a must-win game, Michael Jordan allowing his team to go scoreless for 3 minutes, the final 3 minutes of the game? I don't care what he would have had to do to draw a foul. He'll get to the free throw line and at least cut into it or protect his lead
right,
with two there. But the Cavaliers not scoring a point in the final 3 minutes does indicate, yes, that lack of the killer instinct, if you want to call that, the clutch gene, whatever it is you want to call it. LeBron does seem to kind of be MIA in that regard at times. You combine that with my argument or my point, simply, it's not an argument, it's reality, that a guy who can go hard to the basket as frequently as he did in the first half but can't do it in the second half, there's your reason. It is a matter of fatigue. It is a matter of the fat guy in the driveway. I'm just going to stand out here and shoot because I can't drive past you anymore. I'm too tired. That's what LeBron was against Kevin Durant, who showed no such fatigue in the fourth quarter run that ended up sealing that game.
And I've heard some today, you know, try to argue with, you know, that you will be gassed in these situations against the Warriors because of what you'd have to do against them in a way that you might not.
What you choose to do against them. What you choose to do. Yeah. Remember, Ty Lue talked about that. So did Kyrie. So did LeBron. Say, we're not going to slow our game down just because we're playing them.
Right.
This is how we play.
Right, right. And I get that part of the Warriors, as they're currently constituted, absolutely factors into that in a way that other teams weren't. But I'm hearing this all day about, you know, were they gassed? Because it was they. It's not just talking about LeBron. There were questions all throughout the pressers yesterday and talking today at times about, was the whole team gassed? And I'm sorry, But my snarkiness and foul mood of the day, based on what happened last night, makes me think, then what the hell was all that screwing around and resting during the regular season? Obviously, that made no difference whatsoever.
No, it didn't. It was all a cop-out. I've said that from the beginning. It has nothing to do. If anything was going to affect how fresh somebody's legs were, even a guy playing 46 minutes like LeBron did heroically last night, mm-hmm. if anything was going to impact it, it was going to be the 2 days rest in between finals games.
Right.
It's going to be the 9 day rest between the semifinals and the conference finals. It's going to be the 7 days rest between the conference finals
yep.
and the NBA finals. Don't tell me that it's a fatigue thing because they played 82 games. No, there was plenty of rest here, but there is a pace of play issue. There is an issue of LeBron James being 32, not 22 anymore. And quite frankly, there is a matter of how hard are those minutes when you are playing.
Right.
When you are LeBron at 32 and you are trying to guard maybe the best offensive weapon in the game in Kevin Durant, a 7 foot guy with a 7 foot 6 inch wingspan who can drain threes like Curry, who can dunk like, I don't know, anybody ever could, who can silky smooth his way into little floaters that nobody can touch because he's too high in the air because his arms are so damn long. The only way to block it is to goaltend it. When you're trying to guard him, those minutes add up. When you're trying to, on the offensive end, do what you did in the first half, which is go to the rack, those minutes add up. And when the second half comes around and it just isn't in the tank anymore, and you settle for jumpers, and you aren't as aggressive and, quote, killer instinctive as we've been talking about, it has nothing to do with the fact that, well, maybe I needed another one of those Memphis games off in December. It has nothing to do with that. Frank Gargano, get in on this.
It's hard to put into words what I saw last night. That's the most demoralizing victory I possibly could have imagined, because looking back on it, aside from closing out
more of a demoralizing loss, I doubt very well that the Warriors fans felt demoralized.
Sorry, I misspoke. Thank you. Bob was an English teacher for everyone that doesn't know.
Sorry, it just comes out.
No, hey, you got to check me. I appreciate that.
No problem.
But I just couldn't believe it because I'm sitting there and I'm watching. I'm like, wow, the Cavs are going to make a series. We finally have a series. It's going to get interesting. And then Durant pulling up for that three is what's really going to stick out for years to come. Almost uncontested, just pulling up for that three, which pretty much sealed the game.
And it was contested, but it wasn't contested. And
right.
Here's what I mean by that, Frank, and I agree with you about that play. Because LeBron was there waiting for him. This is going to sound like LeBron bashing, and it's not intended to be that, but it's just to point out a difference between these guys. You saw Kevin Durant catch that ball, you know, take that ball, probably, and he got it just past half court, and took, what, 3 dribbles, and then just
yeah.
pulled up, and bang, without a hesitation, without a moment's thought, without a pause, without a what should I do, do I really want to shoot this? I mean with all the confidence of any sniper you've ever seen. How many times have we seen LeBron, if he's going to take that shot, dribble, 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 step, fake, dribble, dribble, launch. And then sometimes, oh my God, he hit it, and sometimes not even close. But it's a big, long question. Do I really want to take this? And whether you want to call that killer instinct, you want to call that lack of confidence in his own outside game, which, by the way, as I've noted, has been spectacular this postseason
yep.
and this season in general. He has improved his outside shooting this year so much over last year, it's not even funny. But how many times have you noticed this is going to be a real tough decision as to whether I'm going to pull this right now? Kevin Durant, no decision. None whatsoever. I'm dribbling up. There's LeBron. And LeBron is giving ground because, you know, Kevin Durant can go by anybody with those big, long, freaking spindly legs of his and those incredibly long raptor-like arms. He can just fly by. And so LeBron has given him a little ground. And Durant said, fine, give me that ground. Whoop, boom. Bang. Done. Ball game. That's the difference between LeBron and Durant in that type of moment. Now, does that mean Durant is a better all-around player? Not saying that. But, Frank, your point about that shot is very, very well taken. You talk about demoralizing, and you talk about the guts that it took for him to step up and not even have a moment's pause. I'm shooting this, and there's nothing you can do about it because I make these at about 50% of the time.
Yeah, no question. Just pulled up in the King's Court, right? In the King's Court, taking that shot.
That way, I like that. I hate that.
And going when I look at LeBron in these finals, it's like, what more do you? It's true. What more do you want from the guy? He's got 39 points from last night. He's averaging a triple double, as he's told everybody in the media yesterday. It almost.
There is an answer to that question, though.
Please. Go ahead.
If you look at the end stat line, you say to yourself what you just said. What more do you want from the guy? 39, 11, and 9 in three games. He's averaging a triple-double. What more can he do? What more do you want? And the answer to that question is I want the fourth quarter. You gave me three. You gave me three quarters of spectacular. But it's a tight game in the fourth. It's, quote, yeah, winning time. I want what Kevin Durant just did. I want what Kyrie Irving has done. Now, Kyrie Irving, by the way, is spectacular as he was. Made a bad decision, I believe, holding that ball until about 12 and a half seconds were left and then shooting that fadeaway three that was simply not there for him all night. Everything he did was going to the rack. He was 0 for 7 from three, so that was Kyrie's fault. But I'm talking in general about the way he has taken over fourth quarters. That's what I want. When you say, what more can you ask from LeBron?
Okay.
The answer is fourth quarter. Clutch buckets. A bucket to stem the tide,
yep,
of an 11-0 run in the last 3 minutes of a must-win game before the series is over.
Any bucket in that any situation bucket changes how that finishes
a foul
out.
And go to the line, yeah, and get me one of two. Break the little, you know, mini run that they're on, score on it, come back down and get a stop, and then come back, you know,
yep,
anything to stem the tide.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want. And again, I'll say this again, and I know I'm kind of violating my own rule because I'm saying we shouldn't be having the GOAT debate until LeBron's cement is dry. But if we're going to make that comparison again, can you imagine Jordan in a similar situation? I've got a 6-point lead with 3 minutes to go of a must-win game. I'm down 2-1. This is ours. And not score again for 3 solid minutes while the other team goes on an 11-point run. No, I can't. I'm sorry. I can't.
I can't either.
I don't care who his teammates are. Some will say, well, you know, he's playing against the greatest team of all time. Golden State Warriors, greatest single-season team of all time. You know, it's excusable to go scoreless for the last 3 minutes as a team against the greatest team of all time and give up an 11-point run. I'm sorry. I disagree. A, it is not established that they're the greatest team of all time. Yes, they are great, no question about it. But B, I'm not saying you had to outscore them 11-0. But to just not get whitewashed, to make it a one-possession game the next time down, not a two-possession game because we can't get anything, Mike would not have allowed that.
No, he wouldn't have.
And I think that's going to be the be-all, end-all difference when people start writing those epitaphs of two great careers. What separated one,
yep,
from the other? The answer might just very well be fourth quarters.
And as we go forward as well, Bob, because I'm with you, I mean, this is going to be a sweep. It's not like the old days. If you look up in the olden days, 5-game series, you'll actually notice a lot of series that went up 3-0 and the team down, usually at home because they don't have home court, end up winning game four almost because it's a pride thing. That doesn't really exist anymore, it seems. So I'm with you. This is
certainly
going to be
in this case, I don't think.
Right.
And that's not that the Cavs aren't proud, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But I just think this was such a deflating. You use the word, Frank. Demoralizing.
I almost fully expect it to be like 30-15 after a quarter on Friday, and that'll be it. That's why even I personally am 50-50 if I even want to watch this thing. Honestly.
I don't know if I'll go there, Jim. I might hold off on that only because I don't necessarily think that their pride is the pride is gone, that they're just going to quit in the first quarter. It may be kind of what we saw this one. It'll be, you know, a 4-point game or something, and it might be a 9-point game at half, and then it's going to start to come unglued once they realize, you know, we've been down this road before. We can't close the gap on them. And when we finally did close the gap in game three, they took it from us, and that's just when it starts to settle in, and the lead goes to 12, the lead goes to 15, the lead goes to 20,
yeah,
and the celebration starts.
You're right.
I
could see it playing out that way, but
yeah,
assuming what we believe will happen on Friday, which is the sweep is complete, you're already hearing them pontificate. How much should the Cavs overreact to this, if at all? Well, because I'm already hearing that if they get swept on Friday, watch for Love to be traded. I'm already reading those things.
I don't think that's an overreaction.
I'll tell you what. Let me get our time out here because we're past the bottom of the hour. Let's get our bottom of the hour sports center here. Let me give a ticket sweet deal away. Then we'll come back and talk about what the proper reaction / overreaction should be for the second best team in basketball. Ticket sweet deal of the week this week. $50 gift certificate to Loma Linda's Authentic Mexican Restaurant on Airport Highway. Log into 1065theticket.com tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock. Get a $50 gift certificate for just $25. That's tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock while supplies last. But if you want one for 100% off, be caller number 6 right now. 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. You'll get a free $50 gift certificate to Loma Linda's Authentic Mexican Restaurant on Airport Highway. Good luck from
Ganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
We are indeed back as we continue now at 3:51 on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. I want to get a couple of phone calls in here. We'll get to some of your thoughts on what happened last night in Game 3 of the NBA Finals. It's a 3-0 Warriors lead. It's going to end badly for the Cavaliers. My belief will be a sweep. Not exactly going out on a limb for that one. I think everybody expects the Cavaliers to cough up the championship that they won last June in their own home building coming up tomorrow night. Let's see what Mike in Toledo has to say. Mike, you're on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Good, man. What's on your mind?
Well, number one, it's like we're comparing LeBron James to...
Mike, you still there? Mike? Uh-oh. Yeah, we lost him. Either he lost us or something. He can't hear us, or his phone hit mute or something like that. But, Mike, we're going to put you on hold. We won't hang up on you, but we're going to put you on hold. If we can reestablish this connection, great. If not, we'll check back with you. And, Frank, just keep checking back with him, see if it works there, if you can. Here's the point that I'm trying to make about the GOAT conversation that, to me, is far too premature to have. LeBron allowed something to happen last night that I truly believe Michael Jordan would not have allowed to happen. Let's put that to bed. Let's stay current. Forget about GOAT, which is greatest of all time. Let's go to GOTT. G-O-T-T. Greatest of this time. Just right now. Today. Greatest player on the planet. What do you want to call it? It's widely been believed and accepted that that's LeBron James and that the second guy on that tier is Kevin Durant. Do you believe that what you have seen in this series, head-to-head, man-for-man, that LeBron James is still the greatest player of all time, or has he ceded that crown now, or will he, let's say by Saturday morning after game number 4 is complete tomorrow night? And I believe it will be a sweep. I do believe that Kevin Durant will continue to dominate. I will continue to believe that he will be the MVP of the series. And that when that happens, considering that he has been guarded for the vast majority of the series by LeBron, and he has guarded for the vast majority of the series LeBron, will Kevin Durant have ascended to the throne of the greatest player in the NBA right now today? Now, again, that doesn't mean he'll have a better year next year. LeBron James is still going crazy. Statistically speaking, this year he had his highest rebound total in his career. He had his highest assist total of his career and still scoring about 24, 25 points a game. So that doesn't mean that Kevin Durant will necessarily have a better statistical year than LeBron next year. But based on the fact that they are widely considered 1 and 2, Kawhi Leonard's supporters might have something to say about that, but widely considered 1 and 2, when one faced off against two and they guard, and this is an important part of this. In another comparison, maybe the top two players in the league are a center like Shaquille O'Neal and a guard like Michael Jordan, okay? It's mm-hmm. kind of hard when they play each other in a series to say, well, he got the best of him because he didn't guard him. The center didn't guard the two guard, and the two guard didn't guard the center. But in this case, the player number one and player number two in the world, LeBron James and Kevin Durant, respectively, they both play the three spot. They both guard one another for these four games. They would guard one another if it was seven games. They score. When they score, they're scoring over each other. when they allow a bucket, it's getting allowed by the other guy. Defensive lapse, whatever the case may be. Since they have played each other nose-to-nose, face-to-face, man-to-man, eye-to-eye, head-to-head, and Kevin Durant is outplaying LeBron James, even though statistically LeBron is still off the charts. But Kevin Durant is outplaying him for three games, and especially in the fourth quarter of the only competitive game there's been, which is last night. 14 points for Kevin Durant, 7 of the 11 in the final 3 minutes that sealed the game, including the dagger three. Right now, is it fair to say, or come Saturday, will it be fair to say, guys, that Kevin Durant is the GOAT, greatest player of this time? Maybe not all time, but this time, right now.
I'm still not ready to do that yet.
I'm
still not ready to say that he's the best player on the planet.
Yeah,
I'll
tell you why after. Kush, go ahead.
I'm not ready to do
fine.
That.
I'll
yet.
Sit back. Here, and put
here's,
my feet up.
Here's what I'll say. I can't remember an NBA Finals that featured LeBron where he wasn't the focal story.
Mm-hmm.
He isn't the center of attention. It's been all Durant. Durant's been driving the bus. He's trying to silence the haters for going to Golden State and riding coattails, and he's putting up fantastic
Which
numbers.
Which we said going into the series in that week-long Super Bowl-type lead-up to the series, mm-hmm. we talked about how he's got to be for this ring to mean something to him. He's got to be that. He can't just be one of the great players on this team because then he just looks like the coattail rider. He has been.
Right.
Do you agree with me, Jim Cushlin? Well, because you disagree with Frank. Do you agree with me that if this Warriors team did not have Kevin Durant right now, that they'd be up 3-0 in the Cavaliers?
No, they wouldn't be up 3-0.
Would they be up 2-1?
I'm honestly debating that in my head. Honestly,
I don't think
it would
they
be
beat
2-1
the Cavaliers
State
without
2-1.
Kevin Durant. That's
they would have certainly won the way they played out. They would have won game one. I'm not as sure about two, despite it being 20 points at the end, and they certainly would have lost last night. It would probably be 2-1 Cavs right now.
Why do you think they would have won game one with such certainty? The Cavaliers would have without Kevin Durant. Or are you saying the Warriors would have. Without Kevin Durant.
Right. I think they would have at least protected home court in game one.
Durant scored 38 in game one. It was clearly the focal point of this team's offense and made life miserable for LeBron James. I mean, he was the man. In game two, as great as he was, Steph Curry was also over 30 points. And they were kind of like that 1-2 combination type of thing. But in game one, Kevin Durant was by far and away the best player that the Warriors had. So I'm not saying the Cavs would be up 3-0, but man, I don't know that I can pick a game specifically that if Durant was not in these three games that the Warriors win.
Let me walk back just a little bit then. Okay, it wouldn't necessarily be game one, but without Durant, rest of the Warriors as is, they would have not let the Cavs take both in Oracle. So they would have split those first two, and the Cavs probably win last night. It'd be 2-1 Cavs.
That's fair enough.
If anything, it's not that I need more time before I'm ready to fully pass the mantle and say Kevin Durant is now the best player on the planet. That being
said, you got to mind the question though, Jimmy, because what I said was I'm not saying that he will be the best player next year. Maybe LeBron will reclaim that next season in the regular season or something. But just today, right now. I heard somebody say this on a TV program, and I don't remember which one it was because I watched so many, sports shows. But I heard somebody say, if an alien came down from outer space and did not know what basketball was, and you told him this is basketball and this is the object of the game, and they said, who's the best player on the floor? What do you think that alien is saying after three games?
If we're talking just that sample size, he's saying Durant.
Okay. That's what I am talking about, because that's what I mean when I say today, right now, today, best player in the world in this series has been Kevin Durant. As much as I still despise him for what he did to Oklahoma City, acknowledging greatness. It's like I've despised LeBron for what he did to Cleveland in 2010. I acknowledge greatness. And last year, especially in the finals, with what he did was just magnificent. But right now, it's Kevin Durant that has been more magnificent. And so today, that's what I'm talking about. I think he has established himself because he's not just winning the NBA Finals 3-0, Jim, but he's doing it against the number one guy, and he's doing it face up with him. not playing off him. I'm not guarding you. You're not guarding me. We're just both doing our thing. Yeah. Guarding one another man on man for three games. Let's go. Me and you, one on one. He's outplaying the GOAT. Or, I'm sorry, the current greatest player on the planet. He's outplaying the current GOAT. And I think he's become the GOAT. Now, will that extend to next year? Let's let next year take care of that. Does that mean Kevin Durant is better than what LeBron has been for the last 14 years? Of course not. Hell no. Not even close. But just today, the way they play the game and the way they are playing the game against one another, I got to think an alien would look down and say, that's the best player there.
And you may very well be right, especially if we're just talking, you know, this small type of sample size.
Yeah, which is just this series going head-to-head in this NBA championship final. Hey, congratulations to Alex Valdez of Lambertville. The sweet deal winner to Loma Linda's. And by the way, speaking of winning, do not forget your opportunity to go and see all of the events at the Michigan International Speedway next weekend, the weekend of June 16th, to qualify for a chance to win tickets to every event. Text the words MIS ticket, MIS ticket, to the short code 64636. Do that right now on your phone. Dial 64636 and text the words MIS ticket. Good luck to you from the Michigan International Speedway and Toledo's ESPN 106.5. The ticket. We're going to talk to Eddie Meissonette from out in the Bay Area and from Fox Sports. He's going to break it all down for us coming up next on the ticket.
I mean, obviously, it's physically and emotionally draining. And I give everything to the game and want to put myself and my teammates in a position to be successful. But I lay it all on the floor. I did that tonight. Gave everything that I had, both mentally and physically. And at times throughout the game, I was tired. And I don't contribute us losing this game because we got tired. Of course, we thought we was going to win. We had an opportunity. We came in the game believing we was going to win, for sure. We were playing good basketball. You know, we had some really good looks. Can't go back and think of right now exactly all the possessions that we had in the fourth quarter, but we had some good looks. Personally, I got to go home, start my treatment right now, get my mind focused, get my body focused, and get my body ready for game four and take it one possession at a time.
Definitely tough. Hurts. You know, they made some big-time plays. KD comes down, hits a big three, puts him up one, ice it on the wing. I'll probably be replaying that play for. It definitely hurts. You know, I'm human as well as my teammates. You know, to lay it all on the line like that, you know, you want to come out on the winning side. It's the finals. We had our horses in. You know, myself and Bron eclipsed the 43-minute mark. You know, playing pretty well. And they make some big-time plays down the stretch. I mean, they're juggernaut of a team. You know, you got to give credit when credit's due.
I knew it was going to be a tough game for us. And, you know, for us to win, I knew I had to get LeBron at least a, you know, two-minute blow in that first quarter because in the second half, he might not get a blow. The game was on the line, so I decided to stick with those guys, being a home down 0-2. I mean, great players, they always dig deep, have their will to win. They gave us everything they had. You know, I thought our team scrapped and competed. You know, I can't be disappointed with the effort and how we played. You know, they made the plays down the stretch that we didn't execute defensively or offensively, and they took advantage of it.
Well, it's not over. Job's not done. Closeout games are always the toughest. As you heard from many players in this league over the years, how tough closeout games are on the road. I've never been in this position, being up in the finals, trying to close it out. So I know how exciting that's going to be for us as a team, but their fans are going to be into it. They're going to be wanting a win for, you know, from their team. And tonight, it showed. Fans were great. We got to be even better at game four if we want to take this. It's an exciting time, but job's not done. We still got a lot of work to do.
Play a great poise on the offensive end. Limit their other guys besides LeBron and Kyrie to get off in three. And then just rebound the ball. Do those three things, we would put ourselves in position to win. And that's exactly what we did. So that's the formula for Friday.
He said three different times, I left it all on the court. And over the course of his career, he said that many, many times, that, you know, his goal is, you lay it all out on the line, and whatever happens, happens. And for a lot of his career, that has meant victory. LeBron said, I've played against some great teams, never a team with this kind of firepower, and I've been there every step of the way, and I have to agree with him. They got four Hall of Famers in their prime. It's not about the Cavs' failings, although there were failings. The Cavs are a championship team. They just don't have one of the best teams of all time. That's what they're playing.
If you're LeBron and the Cavs, I mean, what are you thinking? Like, what are we supposed to do the next two or three years? Because I'm sitting there saying, I don't know what any team is going to be able to do to stop this. I don't even think, for instance, if Paul George and Gordon Hayward both went to Boston, it's enough to beat Cleveland. And Cleveland clearly isn't good enough to beat Golden State. I just don't know where you're at mentally if you're LeBron James right now, thinking about the foreseeable future. And he says how, yeah, he's done worrying about what other people think, this and the other. Bottom line is he's 3-5 in the, he's going to be 3-5 in the finals. He could be 3-7 2 years from now.
The guy who can't play right now is Tristan Thompson. He can't get on the court. He averaged a double-double last year's finals. He's averaging like 2 points and three rebounds this year's finals. And he's a young guy on a good contract. And I think you have to put him out there and see who you can get. And obviously the name, the hottest name that's out there, because Indiana's going to have to figure out something to do with him is Paul George. To trade a guy who's on a great contract, guaranteed for the next several years, for a guy who you might only get as a one-year rental, because that's what it is with Paul George. If you trade a guy like Thompson to get Paul George, then try to convince him to stay once he's around the culture of LeBron James and he can see, you know, what that does and what that means to his career.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You know, I'm just curious, is anybody going to point out the fact when you have, you know, goofy discussions like that, that Paul George plays the same exact position as LeBron James? Does that matter to anybody? I'm just asking. I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer here, you know, as the Cavaliers look to, and it's so weird that we're talking about this. Series isn't over until tomorrow night. It's not over yet. It'll be over tomorrow night. But we're already talking about what can they do to try to keep up with the Warriors. They added Kevin Durant. What can the Cavaliers add? Can they add another all-star like Paul George? Yeah, I suppose. But you understand, when the Warriors added Kevin Durant, it was to replace a guy who played the position named Harrison Barnes. Pretty damned easy decision to upgrade there. Cavaliers can't add a Paul George or somebody because the position he would be replacing would be, I don't know, a four-time MVP and a three-time champion. Come on. LeBron has made it very clear he is not ready to go play the four, not at this stage of his career. He's not going to go down there on the block and live down there and be a power forward, setting screens, posting up, picking and rolling. He likes to play face up. He likes to play the wing. He likes to do what he does. Unless Paul George is going to play the two guard for you and improve over JR, that's possible, I suppose. But I don't know if Paul George is able to do that. So anyway, just a goofy conversation there. Added on to the montage as we continue hour number two of ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader, and we are pleased to welcome back from out there by the bay. Well, are you by the bay, Eddie Meissonette, or are you traveling, and are you in Cleveland out there now watching the finals?
I am neither. I am actually now a full-time resident of Los Angeles, California. And I am actually pretty glad that I am not in Oakland. Truth be told, I lived two blocks away from the parade 2 years ago, and it was a great moment in a overwhelming moment to witness and bear all of that. So this year I will be in the friendly confines of Los Angeles doing non-parade things this year.
Very good. All right. We appreciate that. Eddie Meissonette is our guest. Eddie is a contributor at Fox Sports, a full-time contributor at Fox Sports. He is also the editor of Sports Fan Journal Online. He is also with Slam Magazine and many more. And we've been talking to Eddie throughout these playoffs, or at least through the conference finals and now the NBA finals. Before we start talking about all that, how can anybody close the gap, including the NBA's second-best team, which it has become clear is Cleveland? How can they close the gap with the NBA's best team, which is very clearly Golden State? Let's talk about last night. And let's talk about, because it was the only competitive game of the series, obviously. The first two went the way we expected the first two to kind of go. But they got back at home for Cleveland, and LeBron James played pretty much out of his mind for three quarters. Kyrie Irving played pretty much out of his mind for probably three quarters, maybe plus a little bit. But neither of them were able to get anything done in the final 3 minutes of the game, in which the Warriors went on that 11-0 run. How do you explain the way those guys were able to score at will so much throughout the game but could not get a decent shot up in the final 3 minutes to break that run the Warriors were on coming from six down to win the game?
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of the analogies that we used in Big Ten football of 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and eventually you wear down your opponent by ramming it down their throat repeatedly. And I think that's what happened with the Warriors in Cleveland. It's just that, you know, at some point you get to the fourth quarter and, you know, the stresses of the game wear on you. And it looked like Cleveland was just worn down, and you, some people, you know, they're constantly trying to defend that it's not fatigue, and it might not be fatigue, but it might not be physical, it might not be just physical fatigue, but it might also be psychological and mental fatigue that, with everything that the Warriors do. And so, you know, we look at the final play of Kevin Durant hitting a pull-up jumper three on LeBron, and, you know, they try to make it some indictment, but that's a play Kevin Durant's been making ever since he's come into the league, and it's an unguardable play. And That's not even a slight on LeBron or anybody else. It's just kind of how the game is when great players do great things. And, you know, what was really unfortunate is that we did get these all-time performances from LeBron and Kyrie again, and we got J.R. Smith to show up, and we got Kyle to hit a couple of threes, and we got literally nothing else from, you know, Kevin Love and Tristan and Darren and Iman and Richard. And it was just, you know, it's just one of those things, like, that this is the time when we say, oh, at home the role players are going to stand up, and one role player did, and then one star player did not, and none of the other role players showed up, and that was really the difference in the game.
You know, it's interesting how there's two different ways to approach something like this when there's a 3-0 series in the NBA Finals, and one is kind of what you just did, which is to talk about how the role players didn't show up, and one of the star players didn't show up. At least he had an off shooting night. I don't think anybody would say that Kevin Love was MIA. I mean, he had 13 rebounds, 4 offensive rebounds, kept giving his team second chances, but just did not have his stroke on.
Right.
But it's one thing to say that they didn't show up or do their thing, the things that they had to do to win. The other way to look at it is, boy, the Warriors can take guys who normally show up and do their things out of their game. Which of those is it? Was it bad Cavalier role playing from some of the guys that you mentioned for the last three games, or is it just tremendous Golden State pressure defensively and offensively, the way they establish pace, that forced the Cavaliers role players into their underperformance?
Well, what I find fascinating about the Warriors, and this is the conversation that we don't have enough, it's a conversation about positional ambiguity. And positional ambiguity is something that did not start with the Warriors. We would actually probably be remiss to not bring up, like, the 96 Bulls, who could at times go out there and put Tony Kukoc as the fifth player and stretch the floor and have four shooters and Rodman going crazy. Or even the late 80s Pistons with Bill Laimbeer being a stretch five and you're playing a different style of basketball. And what the Warriors have been able to do more than anything else is they take players off the floor. Tristan Thompson cannot play because of the lineups that the Warriors play. And they mess up everything that is the way teams are structured. It's the reason why that there are so many big men on the market right now, because you can't really afford to have that many big men on your team these days. And the conversation you guys had before the break, when you were talking about what Paul George would be on a roster like Cleveland or something like in that those terms, is that LeBron James is so positional ambiguous that it doesn't really matter if he's the forward or a power forward or whatever. He's a dude on the court. And the Warriors, if anything else, they've shown that they have dudes on the court. Klay Thompson's capable of playing power forwards. Draymond Green is clearly able to be point forward, point center at times. Kevin Durant's able to be a center at times. And so that ambiguity, along with that length on defense, it creates a different dynamic, and it allows the Warriors to play any style of basketball. And more importantly, it takes the styles of basketball that other teams might rely on, it punishes them if they can't capitalize on what the Warriors give up. So that's the sad thing about Cleveland. It's not even necessarily about Tristan not showing up, for example. It's that he can't play enough to make a real impact. And then you look at the box score and you say Steph Curry had more rebounds than Tristan Thompson did in the entire series. Like, it's not necessarily an indictment on Tristan as much as he just can't get on the floor long enough.
Well, is it or isn't it? And here's the reason I asked that. We're talking to Eddie Meissonette, Fox Sports contributor, Slam Magazine, Sports Fan Journal Online. We know that Kevin Durant is the difference maker from last year to this year for these Warriors, clearly, but does he change Tristan Thompson that much? And what I mean by that is I'm looking at the 7-game stats for Tristan Thompson against the Warriors in last year's finals. Last year, Tristan Thompson averaged 10.3 points and 10.1 rebounds per game. He managed to stay on the floor long enough against the same exact team except for Durant, but in terms of pace, in terms of pressure, in terms of the things that they do, he was tremendous, a double-double every game.
Yeah.
And now it's 2 points and a rebound and a half a game through three games here. So, and Kevin Durant's not guarding him. So what's the difference, you know, between this year's Warriors and last year's Warriors as it pertains to how Tristan Thompson can play?
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer there is that they are playing the center position even less than before. I mean, looking at Zaza's minutes, he played 13 minutes. JaVale McGee played 8 minutes. But, you know, even when Bogut got hurt last year, you know, they were still willing to go out there for long stretches to play Festus Ezeli when they needed to. My opinion is also because the difference between Kevin Durant and Harrison Barnes is you don't mind if Tristan Thompson switched on Harrison Barnes. Like, that's a situation where Harrison Barnes is probably going to pass out of it. Or you have situations because Iguodala or Livingston is playing more, that if Tristan gets switched on him, on those guys, those players are probably going to pass out of those situations. Kevin Durant looks at Tristan Thompson like mincemeat. And that has an adverse effect on everywhere, where actually every player on the roster now has a better chance of abusing Tristan Thompson. Because if Tristan Thompson has to chase Klay Thompson off the screen, that's a bad look. If Steph or KD get Tristan in a one-on-one situation, that's a bad look. And Draymond can get past Tristan Thompson as well. So it's not that Tristan Thompson is really having the worst series. Yeah, he could definitely play better. But adding KD to the roster just gives you less options of what you can sustain and live with. And it pushes everybody to their breaking point, to the point that Ty Lue has to go out there and say, like, who can I put out there that can just sustain and keep up regardless of what the Warriors throw at me?
Eddie Meissonette joining us, trying to figure out how this thing got so far out of hand. Did you expect this coming in? You and I talked, I know, but did you expect games 1 and 2 to be as one-sided as they were, and would you have expected the Cavaliers to blow a 6-point lead and instead of making this thing a series 2-1, going into Friday with all the confidence in the world that we're going to do the same thing we did last year, shock the world? In fact, last year they would have lost game 4, take that back, and then they had to win game 5 3 in a row. But would you have expected this to be as one-sided as it has been essentially through this 3-0 lead?
I thought it was going to be a sweep. That was what I predicted. I've been predicting that since the beginning. And now what I have predicted, blowouts, I mean, that's the thing about the Warriors. They are so uninhibited by a lack of stress and an ability to get easy shots and ability to play defense all across the court. Is that, yeah, like, a blowout is always possible. And coming back.
Yeah, but the blowout's
not
the deflating thing. You know what I mean? Which ones do you think hurt the Cavaliers the most? Losing game 1 by 22, game 2 by 19, or game 3 by blowing a 6-point lead with 3 minutes to go? It wasn't the blowout that really is the worst.
Yeah, no, I mean, game 3 is the worst because now it just feels like the nail is in the proverbial coffin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now you're in a 3-0 situation, and unless you think you're the Boston Red Sox against the Yankees, like, is that really going to happen? That is clearly the most deflating. But every loss is deflating. I think the benefit that the Cavaliers have is they can literally say that we've walked this path in the past. But I don't care. Losing by 20 points is never going to be fun. And I think when you're in that film room and you're starting to think about what are real solutions, I think they figured that out early, that they don't have a lot of answers. Game 1, they said, oh, we're giving up layups because we're stopping threes. Okay, let's stop giving up layups. And then they gave up a record number of threes.
Right.
In game 3, you know, they still gave up a ton of threes in the first quarter, set a record. And yet they were actually able to sustain. And then, you know, they just got their doors blown off in the fourth quarter. And that was probably really sad. So, you know, this is life for the Cleveland Cavaliers these days, is trying to solve this Rubik's Cube of the Warriors with two left hands, it feels like.
Right. Let's talk about the two principles involved here. The greatest player on the planet everybody has acknowledged for so long, LeBron James, against the guy most people acknowledge as the second best player. There might be some Kawhi Leonard fans out there who might disagree, in Kevin Durant. Looking at them side by side in this three-game series thus far, and what makes this special, which I'm sure you realize, but we just kind of have to point out, this isn't like, you know, Shaq as the best player in the game versus an Iverson or something in the 2000 finals, something like that. These are two threes. They both play the same position. They both guard one another for the majority of the game. And here's what we have: LeBron James has been spectacular. 32 points. 55% shooting, by the way. 12.3 rebounds, 10.3 assists, 1.3 blocks. Kevin Durant, maybe, has been better. 34 points per game, 56% shooting, 10 rebounds a game, 6 assists per game, and 2 blocks a game. And most importantly, 14 points in the fourth quarter, 7 of the team's final 11 when the Cavaliers were held scoreless by the Golden State defense. So my question is at the end of the series, if Kevin Durant has another game like he has in the first three tomorrow night, Come Saturday morning, you know, when people realize that was he just won his MVP of the finals, his first MVP of the finals. Come Saturday morning, are people going to start saying there is now a debate as to who the true greatest player on the planet is? Or is this too small of a sample size, even going head-to-head in the NBA Finals?
I think if people come out here and start saying things like that on Saturday morning, then it'll just be an exposition of people who don't know anything about basketball. And
Paul Pierce?
That is, and it might include Paul Pierce.
Because he's one of the guys who got this conversation started. You know, he's pretty much said it right now. He said Kevin Durant has taken the torch now from LeBron after these three games.
Well, let's be clear, man. We can only trust Paul Pierce but for so much. I mean, this man does not know how to use emojis on the internet, and this man somehow was wheeled off in a wheelchair and then came back in a full sprint within the span of about half an hour. So, like, I mean, there's only so much we can do in trusting the truth of Paul Pierce, with all due respect to Paul Pierce, Kansas legend. With that being said, nothing changed. It's actually similar. It's weird that we're having these LeBron Kevin Durant conversations, but nothing really changed when LeBron went from Cleveland to Miami and he started winning championships. We all knew that's the player he was, but he needed to go build and be around an organization that would foster a real chance at a championship. And ultimately, the rings served as the way to start to garner his validation to ascend to GOAT status. With Kevin Durant, we knew he was the second best player in the world. There's never been a question if he was the second best player in the world or not. Maybe there were people chopping at the bit to claim his number two in the world status, but we knew what this was with Kevin Durant. So it doesn't change anything if now on this well-oiled machine, this V12 engine that the Warriors is, that now he's behind the wheel and he's being able to do all these great things. It doesn't change anything at all. It just means that he has a championship next to his CV. In my opinion, this is something that I said before, is that we treat championships like they're binary. LeBron has so many rings. Somebody else has so many rings. But in truth, I think that what will happen and what has been continued to happen is that not all championships carry the same weight. And my opinion is that I think last year's championship holds an immense amount of weight. And I actually think if Kevin Durant does, and the Warriors do pull off this sweep, I think you're going to have an interesting conversation of some people believe because they went 16-0, oh, this is the best championship ever. And then there's going to be other people that are looking at it and say, you went 16-0 after a 73-win season and you added the second greatest player in the world and you now win 16-0. That championship doesn't feel like it means a lot. And so that'll be an interesting conversation, I think, to see how much we value the championship that the Warriors are looking like they're about.
I have destroyed Kevin Durant for going from Oklahoma City to Golden State as much as anybody else has. However, here's what I said earlier in the show, and I want to see what you think about this. Eddie Meissonette from Fox Sports. In my opinion, the way Kevin Durant has played in these three games, if he is not there, I don't believe the Warriors beat the Cavaliers. I do not believe this Golden State team, 67 wins and all that, I don't think if Kevin Durant is not there that they beat Cleveland in this series. And I don't think they're up 3-0. In fact, I think they're probably down 2-1 right now. Kevin Durant hasn't just been an add-on to a 73 team. He has been the focal point of that Golden State offense. And with his 5 blocks in game 2, including harassing and making shots harder for Kevin Love and for LeBron James and so on and so forth, I think both ends of the floor, Kevin Durant has been the best Warriors player. He will be the MVP. A lot of people say co-MVPs after Steph had a great game, too. I don't think so. I think it's Kevin Durant. And I don't think that if he did not come to them right now, and this is why the Warriors did it. It's why they went out there and said, we got to go get him, because I think they realized they weren't going to beat Cleveland any more this year than they would have, than they did last year when they actually lost in 7 games. Do you disagree?
I think I actually pretty vehemently disagree, because I as much as I appreciate and value that championship that Cleveland won last year, any Golden State fan will tell you that, hey, the issues that Iguodala was having with his back, the issues that Bogut had going out for the series, Draymond going out for game 4.
Blah, blah, blah. And the issues Kevin Love and Kyrie Kevin Irving Love had concussion. In the year before that gave Golden State a championship. So, come on.
It's not anything to dispute as far as the things that happened on both sides. But I would say that last year's championship was largely won on two step back three-pointers by LeBron and Kyrie and a tremendous block. Those were the plays, the three big plays that I think made all of the difference in winning that championship. And if those plays don't happen, we might be talking about the Warriors going for a three-peat right now. That series could have been won by either team is really the point I'm trying to make. And that Warriors
understood, but let's look at these games now. Let's go current here, okay? Looking at the difference that Kevin Durant has made, I mean, take him out and put Harrison Barnes back in that spot right now in this series. Do you think the Warriors are winning 3-0?
I think it's still a big possibility. I'm not saying
Kevin Durant's 34 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists, and harassing defense of LeBron James, Kevin Love, and everybody else who comes near the paint, you think they would still be Eddie Mycinette, one of the most respected minds that I've met and listened to and talked with over the last several months of basketball? You think that if you take Kevin Durant off of these Warriors, they're still possibly up 3-0 over this Cavaliers team?
I think anything is possible. I think it's hard to try to put a button in a guarantee. It's true. Like, look, this Warriors team, this is one of the best teams we've ever seen in NBA history. I've said that plenty of times.
And they would be without Kevin Durant?
Yeah, they showed it the previous two seasons. This team won 140
games. They showed nothing
games.
Last season. 73 wins that did not win them a title. That means that the Bulls of 96 still hold greatest team of all time status.
That's totally fine. I mean, I treat the 18-1 Patriots as an all-time great team, even if they couldn't contain one of the best defensive lines of all time in those New York Giants. The point remains that Patriots team is an elite all-time great team, and such is the same for the 73-1 Warriors. And that team is so good. Like, the thing is, if Kevin Durant's not there, when we saw the Warriors go on the 13-game winning streak in the regular season, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green were totally able to pick up the slack. This is a great, great team without Kevin Durant. And they added Kevin Durant.
It is the second best team without Kevin Durant to the Cavaliers. They would not be beating this Cavaliers team. The way LeBron James is playing, the way Kyrie Irving played, if you don't have Kevin Durant doing what he did with his 14 fourth quarter points yesterday, his 38 in game one, his 33 and 12 rebounds or whatever it was in game two and the 5 block shots, I mean, come on, man. They're not beating the Cavaliers without Kevin Durant doing every bit of what he has done here. I just think it's amazing to think that you could just take him off and say they're still, you know, the greatest team. I can't see it. Let me throw this at you. Jeff Van Gundy, let's get to Durant and Steph now, made that statement in game two, maybe the greatest duo ever, talking about Durant and Curry. And people in Chicago just fell off of their bar stools and said, wait, what? as they looked at a picture of Scottie and Michael. People in L.A., where you are right now, probably just fell off of, I don't know what they said on out there in L.A. I don't know if they're on bar stools or at wine bars. But anyway, Shaq and Kobe, what? Magic and Kareem, what? Doc and Moses, what? Bird and McHale, what? What did you make of that comment by Van Gundy, and where would you rank these guys based on what they have done?
I think it's just hard to try to fathom it, only because all of it still feels very new. I mean, there are still times I look at Kevin Durant and I'm like, what is he doing in a Warriors uniform, right? but you know, it's not a blasphemous thing to say. I just think that is really fresh on the grill, and it's still crackling and popping and everything, and nobody knows what it's going to end up looking like. What's fascinating is, like, look, man, we could just end it right now. They have the second and third best player in the world. There are not many times you have the second and third best player in the world on the same team. And it has happened on a few occasions, but it doesn't happen all that often. And I don't think there's anything wrong with what Jeff Van Gundy said. I think it's just so new. So, you know, if these dudes go on a run, which I think a lot of people are envisioning that they are, which is the reason why the people are already saying, oh, the Cavs got to go get Jimmy Butler, or they got to go get Paul George, or they got to go get X, Y, Z, and can Boston do this, and can Team A do that? And we're already, like, bunkering into a situation where we feel like the Warriors still might run three or four more of these off, potentially. So, That's where we are right now, and if they are able to do that, then they're going to force their way into the conversation, and that's what this Warriors team has done more than anything else.
If you take them out of that conversation for now, because as you say, they're still on the grill. Who now that they're well off the grill, and we've seen what they tasted like with all of their exploits, the guys that I just mentioned, is it one of them the greatest duo in the Van Gundy discussion, or is it somebody that I did not mention with the groups that I just said?
You know, I would say that, as far as just being the most devastating. I actually might lean to Kobe and Shaq because those two because those two dudes did such different things for their teams that it made them dominant in so many other ways. I mean, they were just such huge forces on how they commanded attention and respect on the basketball court. I think, but you're just there is no right answer. I think I'd probably just say Kobe and Shaq because it felt like they were the most devastating. But I'm gonna tell you right now, Steph and KD feel pretty darn devastating too. And like I said, when we look up at their CV in a couple of years, we might have to start having to reassess the conversation.
I love that you use CV instead of resume, by the way, because the vast majority of people have no idea what that is, and I love that. Eddie Meissonette, last thing here. If they finish this thing off, which I believe they will, I think everybody believes they will now tomorrow night, it's a 16-0 playoff run. It's a faux-faux-faux-faux, to go back to Moses Malone in 1983, who predicted faux-faux-faux, one less round, obviously, turned into faux-five-faux because they lost one to the Celtics in the conference finals.
To the Bucks.
To the Bucks. Bucks, that's right, not Celtics. Beg your pardon. Thank you. Good call. And then they swept the Lakers, which is an amazing thing because the Lakers were, I mean, ridiculous then, too. It was the start of Showtime. It started in 90, really, or 80, really. Anyway, people are going to say and are saying already greatest individual team of all time, better than last year's 73-win team because they lost. Yeah, this team would be 67 wins and 16-0 in the postseason. Do you buy that? Is that all it takes to be named greatest team of all time? Or do the older players who are saying, we'd have beat them, do they have their points given the fact that the game is such a different game the way it's played today?
I think that the thing that the Warriors are going to have is that they're going to have the legitimate case to say that we have four legitimate stars all under the age of 30 in their prime, which is something that a lot of those teams, even the 83 Sixers, even the 96 Bulls, I mean, Jordan and Pippen were both 33 and 30, I believe, on those teams. And it wasn't that they, you know, that youth, I think, and having four guys on the All-NBA team, it stands for a lot. And I think we've also kind of come to this conclusion, especially in regular season basketball.
Clay didn't make one this year. Clay wasn't even 13, I don't think, because Draymond was bitching about it.
He didn't make it, but I mean, he's got in his, I'll use resume this time, but on his resume, he's got multiple, you know, All-NBA
placements. Oh, okay. I just thought you meant for the season. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But they got four All-Stars. There's definitely four All-Stars on the roster, right? So, you know, it's just,
which I would still contest, by the way. I'm not a Draymond fan. I'm sorry. I'm not a Draymond fan. I think he's in the perfect situation. I think if he was in any other place where he was actually supposed to be one of the focal points and not the fourth guy, I think if he had to create his own shots and do his own thing, I don't think he would be anywhere near an all-star personally. I'm not a Draymond Green fan. He is a role player whose role is glorified because of the greatness of Curry, Clay, and now this year Kevin Durant. His role is more glorified, but that's all. But that's just me.
That's the fascinating thing about the Warriors, and these are the things that we don't talk about enough, is because if you put certain players in different situations, like we've seen what Kevin Durant looks like when he's, you know, he's in a more limited offense. Kevin Durant's still able to be absolutely incredible. And thinking about Steph Curry leading a lesser team, it's curious to see how spacing would change with him. We've seen guys like Klay Thompson before succeed. Guys like Ray Allen and Reggie Miller are his previous blueprint. And Klay Thompson would actually probably be even more of a star, I think, if he were on a different team. And Draymond is an interesting case, too, because while you can try to say that Draymond Green will be a lesser player, I think that there are so many teams trying to find their next Draymond Green. It's the reason why guys like Jay Crowder and Damari Carroll and guys like that are getting all this money, because they're these glue guys. But they're all poor facsimiles of Draymond Green. And the reality is I think that every team in the NBA would love to have him, and they're just unsure about how much you pay somebody.
I'm going to challenge you on that. We'll never know. Don't get me wrong. But I think if you put Jay Crowder in Golden State and Draymond Green in Boston, I don't think they miss a beat at Golden State. And I don't think Boston's any better. I just don't. I don't think Draymond Green does anything any better than a guy like Jay Crowder does. He just does it in a much more flashy place because he got much better players around him, and they win all of these games, and he is in his role, like I said, is glorified in it.
The one thing we do know is Draymond Green is a better recruiter, and we'll leave it at that.
Maybe so. I'm going to throw these at you real fast. Here are seven players from SB Nation who put this together. Seven former players who think their old team could beat the Warriors of this year. The 04 Pistons, oh, we would run through them, man, not even close. We played defense. That was Rasheed Wallace. 04 Pistons, this Warriors. Could they beat them?
Can I ask with a caveat? Are we playing with the 04 rules or are we playing with 2017 rules?
I think you'd have to play it by the rules that they played with. You know, I think you'd have to go back because I think they're talking about the way we played defense, which was a lot more physical and aggressive, and that's how we'd slow those guys down. If they had to get out here in 2017 and play the you can't touch anybody or blow on their jersey type of thing, then you let the Warriors, you know, run the track meet that they like to run, then I think all bets would be off. But I'm talking about playing the game the way they played them in the various eras of these teams.
I think the Warriors sweep the 0-4 Pistons. I'll leave it at that. I think they play Ben Wallace off the floor, and they have a better version of Rip Hamilton and Klay Thompson, and we haven't got to stay in KD, Steph and KD yet.
Dr. J said the 83 Sixers, quote, we would have figured out how to play against this team and how to beat this team. We would have beaten them. Dr. J had, of course, Andrew Toney, Maurice Cheeks, Bobby Jones, Mark Iveroni. No, was Bobby Jones still there then, or was he gone? Obviously, Moses. That's the thing to me. Yeah. Moses Malone, you know, I mean, if you think Kevin Love gets rebounds and made life miserable last night for Zaza Pachulia and Draymond and everybody else, my God in heaven, they'd have no answer for Moses Malone down low.
I agree. And we probably don't give Dr. J enough respect. We always think of Dr. J being this showman, but there was a legitimate time where he was the best player in the world.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that we realize, like with Dr. J. Like I would say that this series is a lot more interesting. I still have a hard time. Like the whole challenge with the Warriors to me is that they, if we're still playing in the 3-point line's there in the 80s, then I still think that I wonder what Moses Malone looks in space. And that's really the concern for me more than anything. So I begrudgingly select the Warriors in this scenario.
The 95-96 Bulls, you may have already answered because you talked about the age. Scottie Pippen said we would sweep them. I just want to throw it at you. Scottie on Clay, Mike on Steph, and yes, Dennis freaking Rodman. One of the greatest defensive forwards of all time on KD. That's a pretty damn good lockdown for this three-headed scoring monster that Golden State has. What do you think?
What's more fascinating to me is that, again, I think the Warriors take a lot of inspiration from the 96 Bulls in being able to have positional flexibility, positional ambiguity, especially when the Bulls are running that 2-2-1 press. I mean, that was just one of the most terrifying things on Wars, especially with Pippen and Jordan on that second line with those pterodactyl arms of theirs. I think what would be really cool is that I actually don't think that's how the positional matchups would end up. I think you end up in a situation where Pippen probably has to take on the brunt of the load trying to guard KD. And I'd love to see Michael Jordan guarding Steph Curry, if for no other reason to talk about how MJ used to destroy his daddy and probably say vile and despicable things about everybody else in his family and talking about he went to Davidson and everything. And, like, we don't even think about Davidson at UNC and stuff like that. I think that would be like the most fun thing ever. And then Dennis Rodman just creating chaos, especially with him and
that's
Draymond.
Three all-time defenders right there. You know, I mean, between Mike and Scottie and Rodman, they're all. I mean, I can't even count how many all-defensive teams they made up. There's three all-time great defenders there against these three great offensive weapons. I just think it would be phenomenal, and I think the Bulls would shut them down enough to win. Not shut them down and sweep them the way Scottie said, but to win a series. Magic says the 86-87 Lakers, part of Showtime, obviously. He says that group would beat this team. You think?
Here's the fun thought about that. The most unblockable shot in NBA history is not the Jordan fadeaway or the Dirk one-legged fadeaway. It is the Kareem skyhook.
Yes, it is.
I would love to see what Draymond Green would try to do to nullify the skyhook. I'm not saying that Draymond Green couldn't figure out a way. It just might not be regular defense. Maybe it'd be raised kicks to the groin region or jabs in the ribs. I don't know what it would be, but I've also seen Kareem be fed up and try to knock people out on the court. So seeing Draymond trying to nullify that skyhook would be the most fun thing ever.
Shaq says his Lakers would have killed the Warriors and said, quote, today's rules, today's now, not 01, today's rules, we'd kill him. You can't hand check. Bogut would have beat Australian barbecue chicken. He's saying because Bogut wouldn't be allowed to touch him and push people out in the post. Shaq would just destroy people down there. And you know what, again, I don't know, you talk about how would Draymond or somebody deal with Kareem Skyhook? How would they deal with Shaq's mass?
That's a very good question. And Shaq is the interesting anomaly in all of this, because I actually think that the Warriors would do a tremendous job in slowing Kobe down, if for no other reason that they've got Klay and KD and Iguodala and Livingston as guys they can just throw waves of defense on Kobe's shores, so to speak. But Shaquille O'Neal is just the impossible thing to manage. And I think the Warriors would have to be in a situation that we talk about with centers all the time, is that they might have a situation where Shaq goes for 40 or 50 on them, but they're going to continue to try to make Shaq play in space. And the thing we don't talk about with Shaq enough, especially the early Lakers, Shaq, Lakers teams, Shaq arguably was one of the greatest athletes in NBA history in his prime before his body started to break down, because he was out there running wind sprints, running by guards at times, and being able to do anything and everything
when
he wanted.
Lean, when he was just something to behold.
Yeah.
So if we're talking
about lean Shaq out there and having him on 1-5 pick and roll switches against Steph, that might be the most entertaining thing ever.
Yeah, no question about it. I ran out of time to get to the other two. We're already late past our time. Eddie Meissonette, it's been a lot of fun talking NBA with you over the last few weeks. Thanks for making yourself available to us. Best of luck in the new home out in L.A. And you know what? I'd love to talk to you again next season.
Hey, let's continue to do it. I'm always available.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it. Eddie Meissonette, Fox Sports contributor, Slam Magazine Online, the Sports Fan Journal editor as well. Got to get out here and get ourselves a Sports Center, but not until I give you our second sweet deal of the week. How would you like a $50 gift certificate to the Par 2 Putt-Putt Golf Courses on Alexis and Heather Downs? Log on tomorrow morning for a $50 sweet deal gift certificate for just $25, half price, tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock at 1065theticket.com. Or you can just be my fifth caller right now to 866-240-1065, and I'll give you that $50 gift certificate for nothing. $50 gift certificate is yours. Par 2 Putt-Putt Golf Courses on Alexis and Heather Downs. Caller 5, dial right now.
Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Finally, after all week long asking for some Bob Seger music to give away Bob Seger tickets, all it took was a subtle clubbing over the head, and Frank Gargano delivers. I like it.
Just a slight jab by Bob France kicks us into high gear in the production department.
Well done, good sir. Listen, we are out of time. It's ready for drive time, so on the way out the door, I figured I'd hook you up. By the way, the winner of the latest sweet deal was Andy Watson from Swanton. He's going to be playing some putt-putt golf. And now, caller number 10, going to make you work for this one. Caller number 10 to 866-240-1065. You will get a pair of tickets to go see Bob Seger at Huntington Center. It's going to be on 8/24. That's August 24th. Tickets go on sale tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, Huntington Center box office at LiveNation.com. But I've got freebies for you right now. A pair of tickets are yours to go see Seger at Huntington Center. August 24th, caller 10, 866-240-1065. Enjoy yourself, and we'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.